Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Eli, my man! Let's go. Hour three of the program. My name is Lawrence Holmes. We are here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Our next guest is one of my favorite guys to talk to. I probably don't talk to him enough. I love to talk MMA with him. This weekend was great because there was a lot of cool stuff that was going on in mixed martial arts. There was a lot of cool boxing that goes on. And Luke Thomas is one of those guys that I like to talk to about this because he knows. Check him out on XM Sirius Channel 93, The Rush. Follow him on Twitter at L Thomas. Okay, first things first, before we get inside the octagon or get inside the ring, I'm curious, Luke, what you think this Supreme Court ruling about gambling means for the world of boxing and MMA.
I wonder what it might do to the preeminency of Vegas betting, but I don't really know. I mean, the best estimates I've seen are that 32 states seem likely candidates for legalizing it, but I guess we'll have to see. In our world, betting is so common and so non-controversial that it's hard for me to exactly know what this means, other than I could see a scenario where if you go to FedEx Field, let's say, to watch the Skins as just an example, there might be some kind of betting apparatus there to take wagers or whatever the case. And it's hard for me to get up in arms about it. I wonder how that might change because the fight game is less of a family event, whereas stick and ball sports are more of a family event. And do they pull from a more working class audience? I know that's going to sound strange, but the Vegas audience is not very working class, even if the general MMA fan base is. So there's a lot of different ways in which to interpret this. My general view is that I think this is a good thing. I wouldn't call myself necessarily a libertarian on government issues, but this is one where I think the government relaxing these standards is probably okay. Nevertheless, there have been a lot of studies done about the pernicious effects that gambling can have on certain people's lives. And so there are some concerns I have about how this will be implemented and how ubiquitous it might be in the sporting experience. But I would call it, how about this, net positive.
I agree with you. And I live in a state that's kind of been known for corruption at the highest level. I'm a little bit worried about how many hands are going to be in the pie. But we shall see if Illinois can put this together without it being a complete cluster, and I'll just leave it at that. Mainly because I have other things that I want to talk with you about. Number one, I've been paying attention to what you've been saying about the UFC's deal with ESPN, but for people who aren't following you on Twitter, and they should be at LT Thomas News, what is this deal for UFC, and what do you think its impact will be?
It's a really interesting deal. It is a deal that they're going to be having with the over-the-top streaming service called ESPN Plus. The deal doesn't kick in until January of 2019, so we're just going to play out the rest of the year as normal. It's actually not their television deal. This is an ancillary or add-on deal to their existing Fox Sports deal, which they have yet to either go to a new partner or re-sign with them. I guess we'll see how things go. For 5 years, $150 million a year for 15 events, specific to that ESPN Plus platform. It involves a series of shoulder programming like pre-fight shows, post-fight shows, the coming replacement to The Ultimate Fighter. I think they're going to retire that series. They're going to replace it with something that's been really well received by the community. I give it very high marks. Call it the Contender Series. They'll get an exclusive season of that, when that deal kicks in. So those are the basic nuts and bolts of it. But the reason why it's interesting is, number one, the amount of money they're giving them is substantial. 15 shows, $150 million annually. That's about $10 million a show if you do the math, which means it's about a pay-per-view that does just under 300,000 buys. That used to be easy to get. Now it's kind of hard in the modern pay-per-view climate. And, of course, MMA has contracted a bit. So to get that kind of money, and that's not even your major television deal, wow, that's pretty interesting. Then on top of that, if you add in the fact that they might get, let's say, $200 million a year for whatever TV deal they end up with, now you're in a spot where you're going to make back that money probably relatively early on that $4 billion price tag if you're WME-IMG. Remember, this is just a North American deal. This is not the NFL. They have a footprint, the UFC does, in Asia, parts of Northern Africa, in Europe, South America. They're going to Chile for the first time on Saturday. Not like other sports. And so as a consequence, you ask yourself, wow, that's a significant amount of money. But here's the sort of really weird part about it. It's designed to produce content just to give a media provider what they need to launch this platform. I don't know how many people are going to watch it. ESPN SportsCenter, maybe, but ESPN Plus, I don't know. So it's got a lot of good, it's got a lot of bad, it's got a lot of weird. Last thing I'd say about it is, I cut the cord a long time ago, and I miss nothing. I get everything I need, and I watch all sports. I have to say, the UFC is a little bit out ahead of other leagues in terms of putting some interesting content on that ESPN Plus platform. And I think in 4 years, streaming is going to be a much bigger thing than it is now. So maybe the audiences will be small to start, but they might be pretty substantial going forward.
Does this mean that UFC is no longer beholden to, well, we have to have a mega star? Because it seems like from a financial standpoint, they're good.
That is really the key shift here. I don't think they're moving away from it entirely. Oh, we don't need mega stars. Well, Paul is pretty good when he's not throwing dollies at trucks to have a Conor McGregor or to have a Ronda Rousey who's active or a Jon Jones who isn't in trouble, or you pick the star. Those assets are so tremendous. You can do so much with them, and they matter so greatly. And they're game changers. They're just conversation starters. They're the things that casual sports fans hang their hat on whenever they talk about MMA because they don't know the rest of the names. You just can't move away from that. But to your point, I don't think the UFC is all that concerned if you, Lawrence, or I miss UFC on ESPN Plus 2 or 3 or 4. Catch it, don't catch it, we don't really care. So they're in this middle ground where they're not nearly as beholden to stars as they used to be, which is crazy because the dominant motive and the dominant way business was run up to this point is this is a star-driven business. Look at the greatest pay-per-view buy rates. It's from stars. Look at the greatest gates. It's when, you know, Conor McGregor's defending or fighting, well, not defending, but fighting for a title. You get the idea. They're not going to exactly go away from that, but rather than that being ratcheted up to 10, maybe they'll ratchet back down to 7.
Talking with Luke Thomas, you can catch him on SiriusXM Rush 93. Follow him on Twitter at L Thomas News. L Thomas News is where you can find him. You brought up McGregor. What type of future do you envision for him?
Well, I would say whatever he wants, for the most part. I suspect he will come back because I do think he is a prideful guy. And he does like money, and I suspect he can make a lot of it. So the idea that he'll never fight again, I still entertain that, but I don't view that as the likeliest outcome. I think the likeliest outcome is that he will come back. Maybe in November, maybe in December. Folks have asked what kind of disciplinary punishment he might face. The answer is probably very little. A friend of mine is a criminal defense attorney in Brooklyn, and he has told me that this guy basically in every way meets all the criteria to probably get probation and some kind of fine. We'll see how much he gets sued for, if he gets sued at all. But beyond that, not a whole lot. And folks have asked, well, what was the UFC going to do about him? UFC should cut him. They can't. They can't. This is like asking UFC to amputate a leg or something. He got so big and so powerful that they're not really in a position to just jettison the guy unless he was guilty of, you know, and I'm not, I understand this is merely a hypothetical. He would have to be guilty of a Jerry Sandusky level crime for them to disassociate. But chucking a dolly or a hand truck at a bus, while reprehensible, it doesn't meet that criteria at all. So my guess is you'll probably see him last quarter of the year. Who against? Hard to say. What weight class? Let's see. But I don't think he's done in the fight game, at least not right away.
Let's go inside the octagon for a minute. What did you think about the way that Raquel Pennington handled her corner? They handled her wanting to stop the fight. And what's the proper protocol here?
Boy, that's a great question. Well, it depends who you ask. Big John McCarthy, who helped write the rules of MMA and has been one of the most decorated referees and judges in the sport, said, look, the corner has two responsibilities. One is to pump them up, to provide tactics, to provide strategy, to provide a degree of moral support, and which they did all that. But it's also to protect that fighter. And I see a lot of one-way discussion here about, well, it's the job of a coach to pump fighters up. I mean, think about how coaches, you know, get you to run that last mile and do that last rep and cut that last pound. Well, right. But coaches also tell you, you know, maybe you've done too much sparring this week, or, you know what, I want to know when you're injured and not just hurt. And you know, you've been training too much. Let's dial it down a little bit. If you're feeling sad, let's talk about it. People keep treating this like coaches are nothing but hype men, but they're more than that. It's more of a managerial two-way operation. So there's that. And I keep hearing these arguments about, well, the coaches know their, and the corners know their fighters better than the rest of us. Okay, but tell me what that has to do with anything. MMA has a serious problem where we let fights go way on too long, either because the referee doesn't stop or because the corner will send out a fighter that shouldn't be fighting. In every one of those scenarios where we can all look at someone and say, oh, that shouldn't happen, it's from a fighter who had a team that knew him better than us. This idea that it confers upon them this invulnerability to error is total fantasy. Look, I think her team are smart people and they're capable people, but we have a culture in MMA, and it's really what the problem is, where we overestimate the ability for someone to recapture their chance at victory. And we also valorize taking a beating. They keep talking about this, and I'm sure you've seen it, about Pennington getting the opportunity to have dignity in loss. That's code for she was allowed to go out there and get beaten to a pulp. She got her nose smashed and rearranged, sent to the hospital, couldn't even go to the post-fight press conference, and they confer upon that dignity. It's barbaric. It's stupid. It makes no sense. I don't think her corner are bad, but I think they made a big problem. And the last thing I'd say about this is the real truth of this. You can mark my words. You can hold this interview, save it. No one in MMA is going to change until something catastrophic happens. They don't believe me, the things I'm telling you, but they will when we get there, and that's the only way they're going to learn.
Luke Thomas of SiriusXM Rush 93 joining me here. You can also watch him at MMA Fighting. Follow him on Twitter at L Thomas News. At UFC 224, Mackenzie Dern was way over the limit. What, 7.5 pounds over? Amanda Cooper was furious about it, saw it in interviews. What is there to learn? And Dern went on to win the match. But what is there to learn from this? And Cooper gets, what, 30% of that purse?
30% of the purse, yeah. She gets 30% of that. Man, that's a tough one. You know, Dominic Cruz, who was a former bantamweight champion and currently UFC analyst, he made a point. He didn't outright accuse her of this, but he at least suggested it was something we had to take seriously, and I completely agree. You know, if you miss, understand, for a non-title bout, they'll spot you a pound. So they had to make 115, but if you weighed in at 116, no problem. In fact, that's where Cooper weighed in at. Mackenzie Dern came in at 123. Understand, that's 7 pounds above the 1 pound they'll spot you. It's actually 8 pounds above. If she had been 2 more pounds, the literally by law, would not have been allowed to make the fight because she would have been fully in another weight class. And his argument was, you know, if you're off by a pound, pound and a half or something, okay, people make mistakes or cuts go bad or whatever. You're off by 7 pounds. Number one, you didn't even try. Number two, sounds like you might be trying to get an advantage by cheating. Just saying, oh, well, I couldn't cut weight. I am a fighter who does their best work on the ground by far. Let me come in 7 pounds. The only time I've ever seen 7 pounds was when someone was injured and they couldn't do road work, right? They couldn't run, literally, to lose the weight. That's the only time I've ever seen that. But she wasn't injured at all. It's just, it's obscene. But the thing is, Lawrence, you have to be very careful about punishing fighters who don't make weight, because a lot of them will go to these really extreme measurements to make sure that they hit that threshold so they don't lose money or they don't lose an opportunity. So you can't be too punitive. The thing I'd say is her next fight needs to be at one weight class up. If she can make that weight, no problem, and she declares a desire to go back down, then they can explore it. But no way you do her next one at 115.
I always wonder when it comes to the concept of weight class, like obviously you understand it. Like you don't want Butterbean in the same octagon as George St. Pierre. Like I understand it, even though Butterbean would probably lose. But I understand it to an extent, and I wonder, are we ever going to move to a point where the weight classes should be or are less restrictive?
Highly unlikely, but what you might see is more of them. There is, for example, the two best men's divisions in MMA are 155 and 170. there is a belief that we should be 155, 165, and then 175, because after that it'd be 185 and then so forth. I have some issues about that, which is a bit of a separate discussion, but people have talked about that, maybe creating a 105. But, you know, what's interesting about Mackenzie Dern's was before it was 115 and then 135 on the women's side. So they made 125. And you actually had other female fighters being like, look, I got it when you missed weight and you were trying when there was only two weight classes and they were 20 pounds apart. But they put that 125 there for a reason.
Uh-huh.
So you could have space to go if that's where you needed to go. To still be off by 7 pounds after that, it's absolutely shocking. So you won't see them less restrictive, but you might see enough of them to make the feeling less restrictive.
Let's go inside the ring now. What did you think of Lomachenko's win over Linares?
This is how stars are born, dude. Was that not incredible? What a smart move by Top Rank, putting him on ESPN. He fights the Colombian guy whose name escapes me, but that guy quits. Then he fights Rigondeaux, and he quits. The first time ever that double gold medalists are competing. And, of course, you know, Lomachenko has this background as having nearly 400 amateur fights, only losing one of them. Then he goes on this fight, going up a weight class, and you can see that there was a real big difference in size and that mattered. And Linares gave it to him. You know, I thought for a while there, Lomachenko was getting heated up, and then he gets dropped by walking right into it, but he rebounded, and he just put his skills to work, dropping him with that vicious left to the body. What's amazing about Lomachenko is his skills are so pretty to watch. Like, he just dances in there. He reminds me of Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was doing Mr. Olympia bodybuilding contest. He was one of the few guys who took ballet lessons to really bring some of this artful nature to bodybuilding, which before had been sort of, you know, aggro male poses. And he brought in a little bit of, you know, sculpture to it in a way. And if he feels like that, there's just this almost ballet dancing quality to what he does, in addition to the viciousness of it all. And then in the day of the fight, he was tweeting ESPN personalities being like, yeah, what round do you want me to knock this guy out in? It's just incredible. This is how stars are born, right? Exposure. The fights look the way they're supposed to. He does his part to promote it. He has an interesting story. It's everything you could possibly want. He's a smaller guy. We'll see how big he can be. But man, was I entertained on Saturday? Yes, I was.
How do you feel about there being stars on non-pay-per-view viewing options?
What do you mean?
Like, being able to see, like, I was so happy that I was out of town. So I was really happy that I was able to watch him on ESPN instead of having to pay for it. And I don't even know, I guess I would have had to go out to a bar to go do it. So to me, I feel like there's value for boxing and MMA to occasionally put a good card on ESPN or CBS Sports or CBS or Fox. Is there value in that?
Yes. So here's what I would say about that. You know, all these times we have Mayweather and everyone feels like you've been taken for a ride, you know, forget the McGregor fight, but, you know, the Berto fight or even the Pacquiao fight, right? Everyone's like, oh, boxing got us again. They charged us $100. And the fight kind of sucked. Well, here is the response to that. Look, in the end, the big stars are going to make the most money by fighting on pay-per-view. And if the NFL tried to get on pay-per-view, fans would wholly reject it, or at least there would be substantial pushback on it, because it's always been free. But boxing, and by and large, everyone in our generation, and MMA too, you're kind of used to paying for it, at least in some capacity. So I don't think that will go away. It's just a very, very easy way to make a ton of money if you're the right kind of guy. But just remember the cynical people about boxing next time when they say, oh, boxing never does us a favor. No, they did you a real solid with this guy. They gave you not one, not two, but three of them on ESPN, and not terrible fights either. Two Olympic gold medalists who were the only two who ever won double gold. The first time in the history of boxing, they gave you that one. They gave you the guy going up from 130 to 135. And it was a hell of a scrap. Linares didn't lay down for him at all. They gave you that, too, and they're going to give you more as well. So, to me, it's like a bit of a market correction. It won't change the big, big, big stars, but get Lomachenko now for free before he's charging you, because this is a great time to watch him.
A lot of people have him as pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. I'm still a fan of Triple G as the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. And I know that he's had a lot of fights. He's long in the tooth. He's getting older. And this thing with Canelo has turned out to be a disaster. How much time does Triple G have left? And do you think that he's still at the top of the mountain or starting to make his way down?
Ooh, well, That's an interesting one. Do I think he's on the way down? No evidence of that yet, although he's a little bit longer. You know, I was a little concerned he was on the way down before the Canelo fight. It was, what, the Danny Jacobs fight, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And that was the one where I was like, well, you know, he looked a little old in that one. You could make a case that Jacobs, maybe he even won that contest. Certainly he was very competitive. But then he, against Canelo, he looked incredible. He was stalking him, taking every shot imaginable, like his chin. People always talk about Triple G's power, but you look at his chin, it's incredible the shots he took from Canelo. It would have dropped anybody else, and he ate them like they were nothing. And sure, Martirosyan wasn't much of a challenge, but he handled it like it wasn't much of a challenge, right? He did all the things that you were expecting him to. So on the way down yet, I don't think so. Probably not a whole lot longer at the top, especially when you've got guys who are nipping at his heels like Crawford and, you know, Lomachenko and, you know, Mikey Garcia. We'll see what he can do. So for now, I'll agree that Triple G's up there, and let's see how much longer, but maybe in 2 years, it won't be the same.
Luke, how can people who listen to my show listen to all of your shows?
Good, real simple. I tweet out everything. Best place to go for me is Twitter. So just go to L Thomas News on Twitter, and I got you.
Luke, you are the best, man. I love when you visit the show, and I hopefully we can do this again soon. And thank you, as always, for trying to make some sense of what is sometimes nonsensical.
I appreciate the invite. Always a thrill to come on your show, Lawrence. Thank you so much.
That's Luke Thomas. He is fantastic. If you'd like to react to what you saw this weekend in the fight game or what Luke had to say, there's some interesting stuff in there. We'll get back to it on the other side of a quick timeout. 312-644-6767 is the number. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score. Shep, thank you very much. Shep will be coming up at 10 o'clock tonight. Right? It says Julie. Julie's in, like, Pakistan.
I think she's back now.
Oh, she's back?
Yeah, but Shep's pinch hitting tonight.
Yeah, but she's not going to be hosting because she just got back from Pakistan. I always like the way that President Obama said Pakistan. He always say Pakistan.
Or divisive.
And I don't, does he also say, what's the word? Does he also say aluminium instead of aluminum?
He says Weiss instead of wise.
And Kaminsky.
Big White Sox fan.
But anytime that he's talking about Pakistan, I always look forward to it. He's like, Pakistan. And that's probably the right way to pronounce it. I'm curious about, I mean, I saw some of the stuff that Julie put on Instagram. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with her about her trip. It seemed like it was a pretty cool trip. Just want to reset before we cross talk with Shep. The big story of the day is that the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that if states want to explore legal sports betting, they now can. What interests me, and clearly there are places that are already ready to go, and Joe brought it up. I mean, New Jersey is ready to go. West Virginia is probably ready to go. In this state, and we've had lawmakers on talking about it over the last couple of years, I'm really curious on how this is going to work. There's some stuff that needs to be navigated in the state of Illinois. Dick Duchossois and the Duchossois family are not just going to allow, horse racing is already kind of in trouble. Like, they're not just going to allow this to not, them to not be players in it. Trust.
You know those people, right?
I know a few Duchossois, yes. Went to school with some.
You got a couple dollars, right?
Me?
Them. The Duchossois. Yeah,
please. Me? No. Them? Yes. Shout out to Ashley. And Juice, my man Mike. But yeah, that's where our graduation party was at. The Duchossois house, like the entire senior class was invited. It's 522 people.
I didn't know he was that advanced in age.
Yeah. Is he 80?
No.
Is he 90?
96.
No.
Yes.
I thought he was like 88.
He's up there.
Hey, I'm telling you,
the casinos in this town, they're going to want their beaks wet. Politicians in this state are going to, and I guarantee you there's going to be a Chicago versus downstate thing that happens too.
Like, we're going to get a lot more here in our area, and the downstate's going to be like, come on, Chicago.
Yeah. Let's share the money.
No one's going to Peoria.
Well, I mean, they got the river, you know, and the river, man. There's nothing wrong with Peoria. Peoria's fine.
No one's taking vacations over there.
You're probably right. But people go to Starve Rock. That's like halfway. They go there for vacation. Well, not a vacation. You go for like an hour. And then you go somewhere else. You ever been to Starve Rock, Eli?
No, I can't say I have. The only downstate place I've been was when I was checking out Bradley.
So you've been to Peoria?
Yeah, but the best thing there was, it was like a steak and shake on the lake.
Wow.
What?
Wow.
I hate to hate, but.
I thought I was hating on Peoria.
I mean, first we took down Rockford last week.
I mean, seriously.
And now we're taking on Peoria? You guys going to get us written up in the journal?
No, normal Bloomington? All right.
You like that down there?
Just all right. Decent.
Champagne?
Garbage.
Wow. Dun, 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 dun. Those are your people.
I mean, tell me one thing to do other than go to Illinois game. I've never gone to Champaign otherwise.
The outlet malls in Tuscola. Hello.
That means you got to go past Champaign to go to Tuscola.
You do. You really do. And then you head in any direction once you get there. You'd be like, oh, Amish people. What's up? The wife's from there, right? So, White Panther. So, we went to her brother's wedding, which is great. I love Mikey. He's a good dude. And this church, I was like, oh, okay, we can do a little church thing? Cool. So, she says, since she's going to be in it, I have my tuxedo and everything. And, you know, women with makeup and hair for a wedding, it's a whole day thing. So I drop her off. I go back. It was about 15 miles from where we were staying. And I mean, I passed three buggies, like horse and buggies, down there. And it was strange. It was awesome. Like, I kind of liked it. Like, it was a little slice of life. But we were clearly in, like, Amish country when he, in the place where he got married. There's like a Shetland pony. You think I'm lying? I'm going to show you the picture. Me and Mel took a picture, and behind us is like a stable of Shetland ponies.
Lil Sebastian?
Apparently. Apparently, we know where all the little Sebastians come from. It's strange. It's quaint. And I mean, I know the Amish aren't listening. Someone will tell them about it, maybe. It's every time we go down there, it's like, I want to explore. And then I'm like, maybe I shouldn't. And she's all like, let's not go. I'm like, no, let's go sometimes.
I hate to hate on this area too, but Depew, I went down there. It's where it's like past Peoria.
That was the last thick crackback that I was expecting. What's your issue with the people of Depew?
So my grandpa's from there, and we had gone down there. A boat racing thing was like the biggest thing there. And I didn't know what to do. Like, the big thing was like going to Burger King. I hate hating, but Depew, man.
Okay. I was not expecting that. We sound like the biggest, like, Chicago elitist ever. Herbie hates Champaign. I'm trying to find Amish people in Tuscola and Arcola and Arthur. Eli hates Depew and kind of doesn't like Peoria. That's messed up.
I've always wondered that Rumspringa thing.
Yeah.
Why do the kids go back?
Because a lot of them don't. But they feel like they don't want that type of life. I can understand that.
I don't know. Once you get a taste, it's real tough to go back to working your whole life.
A lot of Amish families have money, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like you get building set houses up nice for that Rumspringa.
Churning some butter?
Well, I don't know about that. But, yeah, we can ask Shep, isn't he?
Pretty much.
Isn't that what they are in Coal City? We'll ask him when he comes in here. He's half Amish, I think. I could totally be making that up. That might not be accurate. But I think it's 100% accurate.
But where yes. I'm from, think you're elite as hell.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I am, though. I mean, but DePew, like, that was that Eli cracking back on DePew. And first of all, let it be known that I got people in Coal City.
I understand that, but now you're calling all of them Amish, so I don't know how long they're going to be your people.
Half Amish.
Any Amish.
There no Amish in Coal City?
No, you're thinking like Arcola.
No, that's the joke. That's my wife is basically from an Amish territory. That's what I'm talking about. If I had the machine, I would do the Levitard you don't get the show thing right now. Obviously, Coal City they're in the Interstate 8, for God's sakes.
That's right. What's left of the Interstate 8 anyway?
So what, Coal City, Dwight? Who else is in there?
Dwight's gone.
Dwight, like the
too
city?
Small. Well, no.
Oh, okay.
From the conference. I think Seneca's close to being gone too. Some of the old rivals, no longer.
It's messed up.
Some towns growing, others not so much.
Have you ever been to DePew?
Never been to DePew. Never knew DePew existed until Eli mentioned it.
And I mean, went in hard.
Population is almost not even 1900.
I get it.
What's like the smallest town you've ever spent considerable time in?
Me?
Anyone. Herb, Eli, you.
DePew.
DePew. 1900 is?
I mean, how many people live in Arthur? Because I've spent some time in Arthur.
Because I have two of them.
Okay.
I had an aunt that lived in Reddick, which is a little bit south of Coal City. And that, I think at the time, at least on the Welcome to Reddick sign, it said population 250. I don't know if that was accurate in the early 90s, but that's what it was said to be.
Wow.
And then my college roommate lived in Monmouth. And just down the road from Monmouth, his grandparents lived in a town called Gerlaw. And when I say Gerlaw was made of dirt and brick roads, like chopped up brick, like stone roads essentially, that's what Gerlaw was.
The best part is that the people now texting in the smallest places that they've ever like spent significant time. Beddington, Maine. Is it Shake in Maine or something right now?
Yeah, she spent like the weekend in New Hampshire, Maine, and
Vermont.
Vermont.
What is she doing?
Somebody got married or had a thing, apparently.
Okay. I didn't know if she was just like, I want to go check out that portion of the world. Because New Hampshire and Vermont are like opposites, right?
Yeah, like
they fit like a puzzle.
Yeah. New Hampshire is the bottom is wide and the top is small. Vermont's bottom.
Just the way you like it.
Yeah.
We'll talk with Shep next here on The Score. I saw something really disconcerting on Twitter today. It was a picture of Mario without his facial hair. And it really freaked me out. Ruined my childhood. Well, it didn't ruin it. Nick Shepkowski is coming up at 10 o'clock. He will be on until midnight tonight. You heard him defending Coal City. And for someone just texted in, they looked up DePew on Wikipedia, and the pic on Wikipedia is just a picture of their fire hydrant for their downtown district. Eli, can you fact check that? Just look it up.
I just looked it up, and yeah, it's a like a artist depiction of the fire hydrant looking in the background of 4th Street.
West 4th Street in Depew serves as the business district for the village.
Oh, man.
Like Main Street was too packed. They had to push things all the way down to 4th Street because of that.
The fire hydrant. That's the center of it. They got to change that, don't they?
Burger King.
I always say comfort if I'm in a place I don't know and I see a Burger King or a McDonald's. Is in Cole City, was there like a McDonald's?
There's a McDonald's. There's a...
When you were growing up.
I think second or third grade it was opened.
Wasn't it like a big deal?
It was a huge deal. Are you kidding me? It put Boodlers out of business, which is still bullcrap to this day.
Wait, what's Boodlers?
Boodlers was the best, like, in between, not fast food, but not like sit down necessarily.
Yeah, like a takeout place.
Yeah, takeout type place. They had the most awesome pizza burgers from my childhood, and I missed those dearly every single day.
And McDonald's came into Cole City and crushed it?
And it was like the fast food place. So McDonald's was not new, but it was new to town. And so when we got that, it was faster food than the carry-out type of food. You can go there and get your burger in 2 minutes instead of having to wait 10 or 15 minutes for your food. So it just kind of was too fast, and it knocked Boodlers out.
And too furious?
And too furious. And it knocked Boodlers out, and I'm still bitter to this day because I was a huge Boodlers fan.
Hey, that's a phenomenon that happens in the city, too. Leon's Barbecue reopened back up right behind the Museum of Science and Industry over on 63rd Street. And when it opened back up, the line was out the door, down the block. So strange. Because, I mean, look, you're on the south side of Chicago. There are a lot of great places to get barbecue.
Well, that's kind of the thing in this whole city. It doesn't matter what food it is. There shouldn't be anything that opens in Chicago that you're like, oh my God, finally this food place is opening. You have steakhouses galore downtown.
I agree.
You have every neighborhood has the authentic version of whatever neighborhood that is, where you're not going to probably beat those places in terms of getting that kind of food. It's like when Nutella opened up down here.
Yeah.
And the stupidity that was around that for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And I was like, really?
I couldn't understand. Like, I didn't get that at all. Like, there are some places I'm like,
I don't get it.
I don't get the Nutella cafe. Like, I don't get why that's a thing. Like, you could just get some Nutella and then you could
throw it on toast. Throw it on a banana. Throw it on whatever it is that, you know, you put Nutella on.
Yeah.
That's one that confused me because it's like the heart of downtown. It's like, oh, go a half mile north of here and you start to get into like Steakhouse Row over there.
Do you know how many places make stuff with Nutella? You could go to Melly Cafe and get yourself some Nutella French toast to be in the house.
Yeah. Pretty much anywhere that has sweets has some form of Nutella, whether it's some kind of cake, some kind of donut, some kind of whatever. And you have that to go. I don't understand the fascination with that.
Do you? Because I get criticized by White Panther for this. I don't stand in line for food. Like, if we're going to a sit-down place and you're like, it's going to be 30 minutes, like, nah. There's some place not far from here that's as good as what? Like in our building, for example. Like, I used to... Every time I come in here on a Saturday or a Sunday,
Wildberry,
you see people like outside at Wildberry. Meanwhile, if you want it, what's the place right here on the corner?
I'm trying to think.
Sweetwater.
Oh, Sweetwater's right
Sweetwater
there.
Has an incredible brunch.
Sure.
On Saturday and Sunday. No one's in there. Walk around the corner, sit down, and have a good meal.
Yeah. I was thinking of it like while we're at home, which is the suburbs now. But if we're downtown, no, I'm not waiting.
Yeah.
Like, I don't come downtown to be like, oh, yeah, I want to stand here for a half hour and wait for our number to get called.
Right.
It's either get your name on a reservation or at least on a list. So by the time you walk over, you're darn near the top of it.
Yeah. It's, I especially like maybe for a great dinner, I'll do it.
Right, but you're probably setting a reservation anyway, so maybe you show up 15 minutes early, and that's your time that you're standing around.
But
it's not,
never
well,
for
put
breakfast.
My name on a list and wait for an hour.
Never for breakfast.
Absolutely not.
Never for brunch.
Well, especially because breakfast, unlike any other meal, if it's breakfast or brunch, like, that's the one that I'm not waiting on anything. Like, it gets to the point where it's, I'm hungry, Just feed me some damn food. Any way, shape, or form, just get it to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm tired of waiting. It's morning or late morning. I'm getting hungry and I'm getting angry.
That's kind of how I feel.
I need something in my gut immediately.
Well.
Like, that's especially breakfast brunch. That's I'm not waiting around on one of those.
I mean, if you, and maybe this is the way to keep me out of your restaurant, but if you tell me that it's going to be 20 minutes, I'm like,
cool, I can walk across the street in two.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I can walk across the street in two. I can drive somewhere in another 10 that's going to be just as good.
Yeah, I just don't have the patience for it. It's like, all right, well, somebody else will find a seat for me.
That's true. Chef's coming up next. This segment being brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Sometimes life keeps you home. That's why B-Dubs is online ordering. See, they understand. You don't want to wait. So you can stay put when life makes you. Visit BuffaloWildWings.com. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, and if you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions you want answered to cbschicago.com/legaladvice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz and Associates at cbschicago.com/legaladvice. Unless there's some sort of rain out, you won't see me until next week or hear me. You'll see me, though. I'm going up to Bears this week. So at Lawrence W. Holmes on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, by the way, I tweeted out that donut that I had at Glam Dolls Donuts in Minneapolis. Super good. Thanks to Herbie. Thanks to Eli for a great job. Shep's up next. Check him out until midnight. See you later.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.